This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. President Bush and his key advisors met this morning with the heads of a bipartisan commission trying to come up with plans for stability in Iraq. In the aftermath of last week's election, which was widely seen as a referendum on the president's policy in Iraq, pressure has increased on the administration to find a solution to the war. Democrats will be in control of Congress after 12 years in the minority, and Democratic leaders say they will make troop reductions their number one priority. With the power shift in Congress and the resignation last week of Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, our focus today is on the new politics of Iraq. What plans do the Democrats have for Iraq? How will Republicans respond? And how open is the White House to their ideas? As always, we want to hear from you. What is it you would like to see happen now? Give us a call. The number is 800-989-8255. Or you can send us an email to talk@npr.org. And joining us now from his office on Capitol Hill is Democratic Congressman John Murtha of Pennsylvania. So good to have you with us, Congressman Murtha.
Nice to be here.
Democrats have said they want a new direction in Iraq policy now that your party is poised to steer that policy. What plan are the Democrats offering?
Well, I think it's more than the Democrats want a new plan. As you know, I spoke out, and the staff counted up the other day, I spoke 143 times on national television talking about need a change in direction. But the public finally spoke, and that's what instigated the White House to make a change. Changing the Secretary of Defense, of course, does not change the policy. Now, Steve Hadley called me the other day, and he wanted to listen to what I had suggested. I think the only plan is to redeploy. There's two plans out there. One is the plan that President Bush had at one time, and that's to stay the course. And the other is to redeploy our troops to the periphery and then to start an intensive diplomatic effort in order to bring the credibility back to America. In addition to that, accountability has always been part of the problem. We've lost a lot of credibility. Our troops have become the target, and we need to redeploy our troops. We need to give the Iraqis a timeline. It's not simple, but on the other hand, it's a simple direction.
If we redeploy troops to the periphery, as you said, who takes over the work that the troops are doing now? The security forces, and are they ready for that, the Iraqi security forces?
Let me say that the White House says we have 300,000, 215, I see different figures about how many troops they have in place, meaning Iraqi troops. The Iraqi people themselves have more confidence in their own troops, in their own police, and their own soldiers than they do in the United States forces. The United States forces, unfortunately, because of the way they have to act using overwhelming force, have become the enemy, and they become the target, and they want them out of there. So the first step towards stability. Now, this is an important point. It gets lost. But over the year that I've been speaking, all the things I've said, the measurement with 130,000 troops in the ground in Iraq, and now more than that, but as an average, I've said oil production, electricity production, water production, 60% unemployment, all those things are below pre-war level except for unemployment, which is above pre-war level. Now, my point is the first step is to start to redeploy and give the incentive to the Iraqis to take over themselves. They have to do this themselves. We can't do it. When I spoke out a year ago, there were 400 attacks a month, or a week, rather. 400 attacks a week. Now there's 800 attacks a week. So it's gotten worse. More Iraqis are being killed. A high level of Americans were killed last month. So the answer is stability to reduce the American presence or the occupation of American troops, and that's by redeploying our troops and giving the Iraqis the incentive. And I think that's what the Baker-Hamilton Commission is going to recommend.
How important is what we're going to hear from that commission going to be in terms of a future policy on Iraq?
Well, I hope that it's very important. But we have to be careful that they don't try to find some kind of a compromise that won't work. I've said over and over again that some of these issues, you just can't compromise on them because it doesn't work. We cannot expect the Iraqi people to take over unless we give them incentive. It's their government. They have an elected government. They have trained people, and they have more confidence in their people than they do in ours. And I'm convinced there'll be more stability, less chaos. Now, I don't say that there won't be a period of time where we have a civil war, which is going on now, and somebody will have to prevail. Even the English, Great Britain, when they were in India for 75 years, when they left, there was chaos. Now, I don't think it'll be any worse, and I think it'll get stable very quickly. But as long as we're there, we give the incentive to Al-Qaeda to keep targeting us. Iran wants us there, depleting our resources. North Korea wants us there. Even Russia and China recognize the fact that we're providing instability and increasing terrorism by being in Iraq.
We're talking with Democratic Congressman John Murtha. The number to call is 800-989-8255. Congressman Murtha, we're going to take a call from Mike. He's in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Hi, Mike. Okay. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
My question for the congressman is simply this. If you aren't able to control of the country with the number of troops we have there now, and you can't provide security with this troop level, how would we expect to provide security for those people with a reduced number of troops? Doesn't that just put our soldiers more in harm's way than they currently are?
Mike, let me tell you something. We've had 130,000 troops on the ground. And there's an alternative. We could put in 200,000 or 300,000 more. I think at this stage it wouldn't work at all. We wouldn't have the troops in the first place. We're having trouble getting troops the way it is. It would not, if you have a staged withdrawal, a stage redeployment, it would act the opposite. They'd begin to recognize the Americans are beginning to redeploy and the Iraqis are going to take over. It's the only way. We have to adopt a policy that's best for America, not what's best for Iraq. We went into this as a war of choice. We went in insufficient forces, inadequate equipment, and no exit strategy. The exit strategy is the answer to stability in Iraq, and that's to start the redeployment and give them the incentive to take over themselves.
Congressman Murtha, when you talk about redeploying to the periphery, what role would U.S. troops be playing then?
Well, I would say we would have about the same number of troops in Kuwait that we have now because they're logistic support. And would reduce our fighting forces substantially, send them back even to the United States, because we really don't need that larger force. If something happens then that affects our national security, I'm not talking about the civil war now between the Iraqis, I'm talking about our national security or our allies' national security. We're not deserting the Middle East, we're just providing more stability in the Middle East. That's the key thing. It's unstable the way it is. It's gotten worse every day. And when you think about it, they say, well, there's cell phones, there's this, that, and the other. There's only 4.5 hours of electricity in Baghdad right now. And, of course, less oil production than there was when Saddam Hussein was there. And terrorism has increased substantially. So,
since this would be a phased withdrawal, what about the safety of the troops who would be left behind as this phased withdrawal is taking place?
Well, the military, if you tell the military that they have to have a phased withdrawal, there's no question they can do it. You have to do it the right way. You can't do it precipitously. And when I called, my resolution says we should redeploy as soon as practicable. And that means involving the safety of our troops. And so that's the key. And then you initially have our troops on the periphery in case they had to go back in for a short period of time to protect our troops. And I don't think that would happen. I think that would send the signal that the Iraqis have to take over their government themselves. And I think in the long run, it's the only answer. It's not a matter of are we going to get out. It's just a matter of when and how we're going to get out. And I think my plan is the one that'll be the American people have certainly endorsed it, because the vast majority of the American people say $8 billion a month is depleting our resources substantially, and we need to change the direction of this country.
Congressman Murtha, the study group we were talking about earlier, the bipartisan commission, I've read is likely to recommend that the U.S. Bring Iran and Syria into discussions on Iraq. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that. I think you have to talk to your enemies as well as your friends. One of the problems this administration's had, it doesn't even talk to Republicans, let alone Democrats, and now they're beginning to talk to Democrats. And I think that's a major problem. His father, Bush 1, when he was president, he talked to everybody. He listened to everybody. He brought the allies into it. As a matter of fact, the cost of the first war, the 91 war, was $60 billion paid for by our allies. There was 170,000 troops in the coalition versus 500,000 American troops. So we went with overwhelming force. We knew what the goal was. We went up. We took them out of Kuwait. We didn't go into Iraq because we didn't want to occupy it. So he's now got people who were involved in that first war, who understand the policy, who are involved now, and I think I'm hopeful we'll see a change in policy.
You know, there's been a lot of talk since the election about the two parties working together. First of all, how united are the Democrats on the positions you've just been laying out? We have people like Senator Lieberman, for instance, who would not agree with what you're saying. You also have Republican leaders like Senator John McCain, who not only would not support troop withdrawals, but in fact wants more troops in Iraq. You've got a lot of different ideas up there. How are you going to bring this all together? How are you going to make it work?
We've come a long way. The American public has spoken. When I first spoke out, less than half of the people opposed this war. Now it's up 70 to 80%, depending on who you talk to and how you pose the question. So when the public speaks, you have to have a change of direction, and we have to work it out. Now, there's no question that the major thing they're saying is we want our troops to be withdrawn, because most people believe it's a civil war. It's the Sunnis fighting the Shias, and we're targets. We're caught in between. That's the key issue that has to be answered, and I'm convinced most people didn't agree with me when I spoke out. I was criticized. I was demonized. My policy was demonized. Now most people begin to recognize that's really the first step towards stability. So, you know, you always have ideas that have to be changed. Some. I'm willing to look at any other idea, but I really think that the first step towards stability, not deserting the Middle East, not deserting Iraq, but the first step is to redeploy our troops and let the Shias and Sunnis work it out, because that's in the best interest of the United States foreign policy.
Let me ask you another question about the politics of this. Over the weekend, you received a letter of support from the presumptive Speaker of the House-to-be, Nancy Pelosi. She endorsed your candidacy to become House Majority Leader over Steny Hoyer, the Democrat of Maryland. Is this kind of intra-party infighting going to in any way undermine the Democrats' ability to influence a policy on Iraq?
No, it won't influence at all. The White House, for the first time, wants to talk to me, wants to listen to my ideas. No, I think it's the opposite. I think by Thursday this will be behind us, and we'll go forward. And I think as long as the administration understands, staying the course is not the answer. The American public, and they understand. The American public has spoken. As I said, I've spoke out for a year, and it had some impact. But when the votes came in, they began to see that something needs to be done.
Thanks so much for being with us today.
Nice talking to you.
Democratic Congressman John Murtha of Pennsylvania speaking to us from his office on Capitol Hill. When we return, we'll be talking with Republican Senator John Cornyn. We'll continue our discussion about the politics of Iraq. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. In the wake of last week's elections, widely seen as a referendum on the president's policies in Iraq, we're talking about the new politics of the war and what happens now. Our guest now is Senator John Cornyn, a Republican from Texas and a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. You're invited to join the discussion as well. What do you want to see happen in Iraq? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. Thanks so much for being with us, Senator Cornyn.
Thanks. It's great to be with you.
As you've just heard from Congressman Murtha, the Democrats favor a phased withdrawal of troops from Iraq. What is your reaction to that? Do you support that?
Well, of course, we all want to be able to withdraw our troops in a reasonable time and under actually the most the quickest timetable possible. The question is how we do that, and if by phased redeployment they mean an arbitrary timetable, I think that's a mistake. If they mean creating stability in Iraq so that the country doesn't descend into either sectarian civil war or turn it over to Al-Qaeda and the former Baathists, then I think that's a basis upon which to have a conversation and try to reach consensus.
You've been a supporter of President Bush and his policy in Iraq. You've also been a supporter of Donald Rumsfeld. How do you expect that Secretary Rumsfeld's departure will change the way the Iraqi policy?
Well, certainly we're going to have a new Secretary of Defense, but ultimately the person who calls the shots will be the Commander-in-Chief, the President. But I'm glad to see that he's getting advice from today, Congressman Hamilton and former Secretary of State James Baker III as part of the Iraq Study Group to come up with, as he says, a fresh set of eyes on the problem. I think the American people, I disagree a little bit with Congressman Murtha. I don't think they unequivocally decided how they feel about the Iraqi situation on Election Day. What they recognized is that neither stay the course nor quitting are the only alternatives available, and they expect us to work harder to try to solve this problem, because this is one instance where if we don't get it right, the enemy will follow us here, and we'll continue to be in jeopardy here, right here in the United States.
Do you see a role for Iraq's neighbors, Syria and Iran? Should the United States begin talking with them now?
Well, I certainly think that's a good idea. Iran is not a monolithic country. There are significant elements in that country who hopefully will ultimately marginalize the more radical Islamic extremists in that country. I think it's good to see if we can find some accommodation. They certainly don't want a power vacuum in Iraq because that threatens their own security. So I certainly think that talking to them, I'm not talking about conceding anything, but I'm hearing what they have to say and seeing if there is some basis upon which to find common interests and build from there is seems to me a good idea.
We're talking with Republican Senator John Cornyn about the new politics of Iraq. The number is 800-989-8255. We're going to go to Matt in Riverhead, New York. Hi, Matt.
Hello?
Hi, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to know what the senator thought that we should do about Muqtadir al-Sadr. I believe that infighting and the quasi-civil war that is going on right now is more dangerous to America and Iraq's future than al-Qaeda or their version in Iraq. Al-Sadr is entrenched in al-Maliki's government with 23-something seats in the parliament. I mean, how do you think that we should deal with him? It's obvious that if we oust him out of the government, that we delegitimize that government, and because he was democratically elected, but he and most of his death squads are entrenched in the National Guard, the police, and they're the ones doing most of the death squad and killings and kidnaps.
All right, let's let the senator respond. Thanks so much for your question, Matt.
Well, that's a great question. And al-Sadr has been a real part of the problem, although I guess I would differ a little bit from Matt and say that the only problem in Iraq is not sectarian violence. It's unfortunately one of many problems. But I think clearly the government of Iraq needs to gain a monopoly on the use of force. And right now, you have militias vying for that authority in the streets, and the government not asserting itself. So one way or the other, either through the political process or through disarming al-Sadr and his militias, the government needs to gain a monopoly on the use of force in order to provide some stability in the region. And unfortunately, as we all know, that has not happened.
Now, sectarian violence is not the only problem, as you said, but it's certainly one of the biggest problems. And, you know, what ideas do you have for solving that, given that there's a great deal of mistrust on the part of Sunnis toward the Shiite-dominated government? Can the government really get a handle on that sectarian violence?
I don't know the answer to that completely, but I do know that as long as you have the government with trained policemen and with trained soldiers, and at the same time have these armed militias, which are accountable to no one except for their leaders like al-Sadr, that it is an untenable situation. And so these militias need to be disarmed, either by use of force or by bringing them into the political process. This is not, I think Mr. Murtha and I would agree on one thing, and that is this is not something that the United States can force Iraq to do. This is something they need to do for themselves. We need to use all measures available to us to encourage them to step up and make the hard decisions and to bring the violence there and the instability to a close. I don't agree with Mr. Murtha that he says that redeploying our troops out of Iraq, he's mentioned they should be redeployed to Okinawa at one point, that's the first step to stability. That's the first step, in my view, to further sectarian violence and full-blown civil war and a power vacuum, much like was created when the Soviet Union left Afghanistan in 1979, which, of course, gave rise to the Taliban and al-Qaeda.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us today, Senator Cornyn.
Thanks for having me.
Republican Senator John Cornyn of Texas spoke to us from his office on Capitol Hill. And joining us now from our bureau in New York is journalist George Packer. He's covered Iraq for The New Yorker magazine and is author of Assassin's Gate, America and Iraq. Thanks so much for being with us, George.
It's a pleasure.
You know, I was struck as I was listening to Senator Cornyn and Congressman Murtha. I felt like I was hearing the same arguments from them that we've been hearing for a long time without a whole lot of brand new, fresh perspective. And I was wondering if we're just going to hear a rehashing of those arguments or if they're really going to find a new way into a new policy for Iraq.
The change I heard was one of tone. Congressman Murtha sounded very confident and aggressive in his argument, as if he knows now that he's got the majority party in Congress behind him and behind his policy. And Senator Cornyn sounded pretty tentative and as if he isn't quite sure that what he's saying is actually going to hold true. They may well just be staking out starting positions for negotiations, but I fear that the Iraq War has been so divisive and polarizing in this country, including in Washington, especially in Washington, that we may find that the majority of Democrats and the White House simply have no common ground on this, and we will have this fought out in speeches and in hearings for the next 6 months without any real change in policy because there's no common ground for them to change the policy on.
Well, let's talk about some of the ideas that the Democrats now are in a position to bring to the forefront of the discussion. Congressman Murtha talking about redeploying troops to the periphery, a phased withdrawal to the periphery. How realistic is that?
Well, I'm not quite sure what he meant by periphery. When you asked him, he said, well, we'll keep our logistics troops in Kuwait at the same numbers, and the rest can go home. At least that's what I heard him say, which sounds less like redeploying to the periphery than simply getting out of the region with all except maybe a few brigades left in Kuwait. And if that's the case, then it really is an abandonment of the Middle East. I think he's a little blithe about his assumptions of what would happen in that case. He says that if we leave, there will be greater stability because we are the main force of the chaos. I simply don't think that's true anymore. It may well have been true in the first year or two of the war, but now it's a civil war in which we're playing the role essentially of the buffer or the lid. And without us, I think it simply widens dramatically. The number of killings go up dramatically, and we are no longer in a position to do anything about it, and we're watching. And that has, I think, a devastating effect on the Iraqi people, of course, but also on the way the world sees the United States. So I think to say that redeploying will create greater stability is simply wishful thinking. It's a way to make that policy more palatable. I think if someone's going to make that argument about redeployment, they should be very honest about what the likely consequences on the ground in Iraq are.
A lot of hope is sort of being pinned on this bipartisan commission, which met today with the president. And but do you really expect that they're going to be able to come up with some startlingly new strategy or solution that hasn't already been thought of?
No, and I think they must be somewhat staggered by the amount of expectation that is steadily accumulated on their report. I mean, when they were announced by Congress earlier this year, hardly anyone took notice. And suddenly, it seems as if the entire body politic is waiting for their report so that we can move. And in the meantime, we're utterly paralyzed in Iraq. But there is no answer that no one has thought of. There is no magic bullet. And they said that when I met with them on a panel of journalists in Washington about a month ago. They know that there is simply no easy way to fix this. My guess is that they will come up with something like a proposal to tie our continued support for the Iraqi government, which includes reconstruction money, troop levels, and the functions of those troops, especially in the training and advising of Iraqi forces. They will attach conditions to the continuation of that support, and those conditions will be that there be a real movement toward a political settlement among the factions in Iraq. At this point, they're barely talking to each other, and that will require the involvement of the neighbors. My guess is it will be somewhere between stay the course and withdraw, but that has to have a time on it. And if in X number of months the Iraqi factions show that they're incapable of a settlement, which is quite possible, then I don't see an alternative to beginning to pull out American troops.
We are talking with George Packer, author of Assassin's Gate, America in Iraq, and he's covered Iraq for The New Yorker magazine. We're talking about the new politics of Iraq, and if you'd like to join the discussion, the number is 989-8255. That's 800-989-8255. Of course, you can send an email to talk@npr.org. And we're going to go to the phones now. We're going to go to Pablo, who is in Ithaca, New York. Hello, Pablo.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, Pablo.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes. My question is the following. There had been talks about perhaps dividing Iraq into three parts. And personally, I believe it's perhaps the only proactive endeavor that the U.S. government and the army could do over there. I believe that it will bring something constructive, perhaps in the sense that it will help to sort out the regional divisions and religious and ethnic divisions. And there is an immediate precedent, for instance, with the Balkans, in which at the end it seemed to be what people wanted to have. I think also that it's a practical way to sort of keep the soldiers there until a particular period of time, and at the same time have a deadline, and the U.S. could bring something constructive in terms of organizing that and bring a complete package of reorganization and reconstruction.
All right, Pablo, I'd like to get our guests to respond. I also want to remind our audience that you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. George, go ahead.
Well, it sounds like a practical idea. The problem is it simply can't be an American idea. It has to come from the Iraqis. They have to give their assent to it. Right now, the Kurds are certainly happy to go their separate way. The Shia are divided. One faction is pushing for a Shiite super region in the south. The other is Sadr's faction is more nationalistic. The Sunnis are dead against it. They see themselves as the sort of essential Iraqi nationalists, and the idea of being handed their desert province with no oil and told that this is your third of Iraq is pretty unappealing. Now, if it came with oil, then perhaps you can talk about it. But what I said earlier still holds. There needs to be a political negotiation which all the key issues, oil, federalism, militias, debathification, and the status of Kirkuk are on the table. And if the Iraqis at the end of that negotiation decide that they're going to have three autonomous regions, so be it. But it has to come from them. It can't simply be American policymakers telling Iraqis, here's what we've come up with, because we have very little leverage left in Iraq.
George, is there any point in going back to the international community now and seeing if the United States can get any support from the international community, if there is to be a withdrawal of U.S. troops, for instance?
I'm sure that the Baker-Hamilton Commission is going to call for that. They have been utterly mystified why this administration has seemed to want to do it alone and has never really made a serious effort to bring the neighbors, the Europeans, and others into Iraq. That's sort of James Baker's instinct, is to turn to the international community. It may be too late. Why would European countries or Muslim countries want to send troops into a civil war or want to pour money down what looks like a rat hole in Iraq? I think it may be too late to get them to. However, the Iranians and the Syrians do have interests, and they themselves cannot contemplate Iraq in a full-blown civil war without some concern. And so that is the leverage we can use to try to bring them into the negotiations. They're not going to bail us out, but they may find that their own interests and ours coincide at some of these peripheral areas, and that seems to me the only hope for bringing them into a settlement. Without them, I don't think there can be a settlement.
And just one last question. I mean, how much do you think Robert Gates, as Secretary of Defense, assuming that he is confirmed, how much do you think his approach might change our policy in Iraq?
I think it will change. I think he's very skeptical of the administration's policy. I talked to him in that meeting I had with the Iraq study group, and he asked some very skeptical questions about the way things are going. And I think he's going to have a lot of leverage. But I also want to say we have friends and allies in Iraq, and if we simply pull out without any contingency plans for rescuing those people, then we will have compounded betrayal and failure in Iraq, and our policymakers need to keep that in mind.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us today, George.
Thank you.
Packer is a journalist and author of Assassin's Gate. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.